Perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, so as recently, I think, as February or March this year, I'm not sure that any of us really envisaged quite the extent that all of our home and work lives were about to change because of the coronavirus pandemic. And I'm particularly aware of all the talk of getting back to normal. But frankly, from the perspective of restoring biodiversity, then getting back to business as usual is the last thing that we want. Let's leave the old way of doing things in LP Hartley's foreign country, and let's talk about some of those changes in the brave new world post-COVID-19. I have the next slide. So we were expecting 2020 to be a bit of a moment for biodiversity and for nature. There was a lot of global meetings, a World Conservation Congress, a UN Oceans Conference, a UN Nature Summit, that all culminated in Kunming in China. In the Global Biodiversity Conference that would agree on a game-changing post-2020 biodiversity framework. This was supposed to be the year that launched a decade of restoration and put nature-based solutions front and center in climate negotiations. Next slide, please. But COVID-19 had some other plans, and just like the Red Queen told Alice, we've got to learn and we've got to adapt faster than ever. It's not too late to make a difference to biodiversity, to natural capital, to nature, but only if we start now. And the delays to these international meetings are really not helpful here, because we need change at every level, from local to global. The IPBES report last year said, through transformative change, nature can still be conserved, restored, and used sustainably. And we need to do that, remembering that that's also key to meeting most of our other global goals, things like having a survivable climate and feeding everybody. So what do I mean by transformative change? Well, a fundamental system-wide reorganization across technology, economic and social factors, including society's paradigms, goals and values. Steering right away from the current paradigm of economic growth at all costs. Next slide, please. Now, there have been some apparent benefits to the natural environment during the COVID-19 lockdown. There may not really be dolphins frolicking in the canals of Venice, I'm afraid, as you might have read, but the water quality is certainly better, and there are certainly goats in Llandudno, if that was important to you. So there are good data to show some effects on marine, freshwater and terrestrial species, evidently thriving in the absence of noise, light and other direct disturbances. I work with the Marine Turtle Project in Crete, showing a huge increase in successful turtle hatching this year because there's no foreign tourists. And so, you know, when we move out, nature very quickly moves in. We read that wildflowers are thriving on our road verges because the amount of maintenance and routine management has gone down. And sensitive habitats, lichen flora, ancient woodlands will be benefiting from improvements in local air quality. And as we've already heard, the biggest ever annual fall in carbon emissions is inextricably linked to biodiversity, and there will be benefits there. But we're also seeing biophilia. My social media feeds are full of people interacting with and appreciating nature. And that in itself is important. If you don't appreciate nature, you won't fight to save it. And maybe being stuck indoors for a few weeks makes people appreciate a starling or a dandelion a little bit more. Can I have the next slide, please? But it's not all sunshine and roses. Just as some sites are benefiting from benign neglect, lockdown restrictions have meant that there's a lack of essential management at some sites, which that may well be a short-term problem that can quickly be rectified, but we are noticing sites are not being managed quite as intensively as they would otherwise be. And with most of the law-abiding citizens of the world and many of the law enforcers in some degree of lockdown, it's definitely provided an opportunity for illegal logging, which we've definitely had evidence of from South America, poaching, particularly for high-value items like ivory, hunting, overfishing, and overexploitation of other wildlife, because the prices are high. At the moment, fish prices are high, so it's a tempting time for people to indulge in taking more than a sustainable portion of that resource. In the UK, we've seen an increase in waste and fly tipping because recycling centres have been closed. There's an increase in food waste because of changes in supply chains. Everyone's now eating at home instead of out or at their place of work. And so that food, the supply chains can't match that sudden change, and there's been an overuse of some ecosystem services unnecessarily. We've even seen a new waste stream in single-use surgical masks. In my particular field, the lack of access to land, either because it's not possible to get surveyors there because of transport and logistic issues, or because landowners are unwilling to have people on their land because they're nervous about disease transmission, means that surveys aren't getting done, so we're not having good scientific information to underpin development, to justify the licensable operations that protect that affect protected species. And as I mentioned at the outset, some important global agreements on biodiversity and climate change have now been postponed for well up to 12 months. Next slide, please. So lockdowns around the world are starting to be eased. How can we use what we've learned about the environmental benefits and risks of sharp drops in economic activity to better understand the mechanics of environmental sustainability? Well, the oil industry obviously is a key driver. The climate crisis and the related biodiversity crisis. And the oil industry is in a bit of a turmoil, with a barrel of crude hitting an unprecedented, I think it was -$40 a barrel at one point. Even currently at $30 a barrel, shale gas becomes uneconomic. And Donald Trump has said he'll look to bail out the American oil and gas industry. They've already propped up US airlines to the tune of $25 billion. And indeed in China, it's not even certain that the wet markets where COVID-19 is believed to have originated will be shut down. So is that what we want, to rush back into the glide path of disaster? Or is it time to make policy as though we actually need to have clean air to breathe and water to drink? Now, COVID-19 has shown us that people will change their behaviour if it's for the health of their families, even for a virus they couldn't see and they were told would probably be quite mild for most people contracting it. Returning the world to how we were pre this pandemic will quickly wipe out any modest environmental benefits of the shutdown, and we need to make huge transformational changes. We could also take some lessons, both good and bad, from the comms around COVID-19 about how to explain to people in human terms why it's necessary to take actions that may be difficult in pursuit of a more important strategic outcome. And prioritising important strategic outcomes over immediate wants is not something human brains are very good at. Can I have my last slide, please? So what do we need to do now? Well, obviously, we've got to make sure that we really understand the interdependencies between climate change and biodiversity, and the outputs of those COPs are closely linked. I would say that ecology is something that's misunderstood and filed away quietly in DEFRA, no offence, whereas it's something that's front and centre. How we interact within the environment is important in all policy making, not just environmental policy making. And maybe we should be better testing our policy decisions in tax, in transport, in healthcare, against its impacts on nature. I think we need to mainstream biodiversity assessment across all land use decisions. We need a natural infrastructure plan. How will we support the ecosystems that support us? In our planning, our global food system, for example, is vulnerable to biodiversity loss. If we lose pollinators, we lose 35% of our global crops. With a million species at risk of extinction, including pollinators, we need to shore up those natural ecosystems and need to make investments in things like agroforestry, regenerative agriculture, and mangrove restoration. Now, we need a target of protecting much larger areas if we're really to preserve ecosystems structurally and functionally. And the driver now is to deliver 30% of land and sea area under conservation measures, with 10% strictly protected. I think that we should make reporting on biodiversity and ecosystem service impacts mandatory for companies alongside with their climate reporting, because if you don't include your wider effects on biodiversity, you haven't really understood the issues around your carbon emissions. And then finally, just a tiny little thing, rethink the economic system as though the environment mattered. If Amsterdam can do it, other cities and larger policy divisions can too. Now, it sounds like I'm being pretty idealistic here, but if we think about it, the twin crises of biodiversity loss and climate change, they might move slower than COVID-19, they may seem more nebulous, but they're infinitely more threatening. And we have a chance now to build on what we've learned to make a difference right now and actually make 2020 the year that everything changes for the better. Thank you.